Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello? Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
All right. Welcome back to Insane in the Membrane podcast with me, Rich Wilson. I think it's about time we had a chat about men's mental health, don't you?
Insane in the Membrane.
This time, I got to speak to a very, very good friend of mine, a man that I'm going to say it. He changed my life, this man. I met him when I first started as a barman up the creek, and he came through. He was, I knew him because he was in one of my favourite ever TV shows, Spaced. He played the character of Tyres, which was mine and my son's favourite character in that programme. Got to meet him, got friends with him. And he's a beautiful man. We share a birthday as well. 29th of January is the same. We share the same day. And I love him. And it was a real privilege to get him on the show. He's an absolute dude. And you're going to love him. So here we are. Michael Smiley. Mr. Michael Smiley. How are you, man?
I'm good, Rich. All the better for seeing you, man.
And you, man. Ages. Yeah, it's too long, man. Too long. You've had a busy week, man. This is...
It's just, you know, it's that sort of post-Christmas, New Year, coming out of that weird wasteland that is Christmas and New Year. It's never. You don't know. Yeah. You're getting up late. The kids are going to... I've got a 13-year-old and an 8-year-old. So you're letting them stay up later. So it means they're getting up later and you're getting to lie in longer.
Of course, yeah.
And then we're staying in jammies and we're eating leftovers and we're not going out. And then all of a sudden you go, I don't know what day it is. We don't know what day it is. We don't know what date it is.
Yeah. There was some smart ass people online. And they were going, all these people talking about what day is it? It's on your phone, knobhead. You go, I've not looked at my phone. Yeah. I'm spending time with loved ones. I'm not on Twitter looking at your stupid fucking bollocks. I mean, are you on Instagram and things like that?
No, I'm not. I'm on Twitter. I've come off Facebook.
Yeah.
I think Facebook has now become so incestuous and parochial. And there's parts of it that are fantastic. You know, if there's stuff you want to know or you need help, Facebook's brilliant for that. And if you want to keep in contact, Facebook's brilliant for that. But also it's, you know, I just don't really want to get involved in other people's small-mindedness either.
No. And,
you know, people's opinions on the political state, I don't really... I'm not lying awake at night time wondering what other people's opinions are.
No, it's not
that I don't need your opinion.
It's just
like we know what's right and wrong.
Yeah.
You've got the micro and the macro of situations. And to come away from it and get the fuller picture and go, what am I wanting from this? You know, what's motivating me here?
Yeah.
You know, there's an expression that, it's not my expression, but I use it a lot. Human beings are motivated by two things, love and fear. And if you practice one, the other disappears. So whatever Tommy Robinson or Brexit or Remain or whatever those things that are out there, Trump or May or Corbyn or whatever is out there that's swirling around in the shit silt that's in our environment now, there's a lot of it's fear-based.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to think, I must practice love today. Let's try and practice love today and see where that takes us.
Man.
Because if you turn around and say, why would I do that? Well, because you've been practicing fear. And people go, no, I haven't. And you go, well, you have. If you've got an opinion on that, and you think that person's a cunt for that or an arsehole for that, That's fear, because you're frightened that you're not being heard, and you're frightened you're going to get steamrolled, and you're frightened that you're insignificant and that your life doesn't mean anything. Wow. And all of those things, right? And none of it's true. None of it's true. The truth is somewhere in between.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
The truth is somewhere in between. And if I was to go and speak to people that I had an opposing political view of me, and I asked them what their day was like and how they went about their day, I bet you the day's just the same as mine. I bet you they love their mother.
Yeah.
And I bet you they love their kids, and I bet you they want the best for their children. Now, they'll top that with wanting it as some sort of, you know, special nirvana.
Yeah.
It might be one colour only or whatever, right, or one religion only. Whatever that is, that's theirs. But once you pull away from, you get into that.
Yeah.
That I can't do anything about that. But if I can, there's a brilliant podcast, and there was this bloke, I think it was on Love and Radio. There's a podcast called Love Plus Radio or Love and Radio. And there was one called The Silver Dollar. And its second part was How Do You Argue? You should watch out, listen
before.
Yeah,
I'll have a listen.
Yeah, and it's a bloke who was a black blues and soul and funk pianist.
Yeah.
And he ended up in the 80s with the rise of country music,
right,
playing honky-tonk piano for a country band, which meant that he ended up in a lot of redneck, white-only
bars. Yeah.
And he ended up in this argument come conversation with this bloke who then reveals himself to be the big hoo-ha for the Ku Klux Klan for
Holy
the area.
Shit. Right.
And they end up having this amazing friendship relationship.
Wow.
I won't ruin any more
no,
for
no,
you,
no,
but it's brilliant because he talks about how to argue, what it is we engage, what we find is common ground.
Yeah, right.
Don't stand and throw stones from your own environment.
Yeah.
Because what you're doing is you're creating your own ghetto.
Amazing.
In your head.
Yeah.
We have to integrate. We have to be with each other. We have to blend.
And that's what's happening with a lot of social media now, which puts me off, is that we're not having these discussions. We're just, like you say, we're throwing stones at each other.
Yeah, there's a lot of reasons why, you know, and do they know it or do they not know why people move to the suburbs? And I'm from the suburbs, really. You know, people move to the suburbs because they get tired or frightened of having to live cheek by jowl with people with different cultures. So they feel that their culture's being diluted. So they move to the suburbs so they can join golf clubs or hang around with other like-minded people.
Yeah.
So they can still use derogatory terms from the 1970s.
Yeah.
You can still use the N-word or the P-word or the, you know.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
You can still call Irish people patties if you want.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. That's
and all that. Yeah. So you moved to there and you helped perpetuate this sort of ring of fear.
Yeah, man.
Slowly but surely strangles environments. And what is it? It's not love, it's fear. Now you'll say, I'm doing it because I love my family and I want to give my family breathing space, and it's all too. But really, it's so that you can continue not being challenged.
Yeah.
Every day that you live in an inner city, you're challenged. You're challenged, just visually you're challenged.
Of course you are.
Now if you start pulling against it, it's painful.
Yeah.
Right? And the moment you start thinking along those lines, it's really hard to unthink it.
Yeah.
Because what you start looking for, your brain starts looking for the stuff to reinforce that opinion.
Amazing. Yeah.
And before you know it, you're trapped. And somewhere down the line, other people are praying you're going to have an epiphany. You know, you're going to have a road to Damascus somewhere down the line.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're going to walk in front of a bus and a fucking a gay Muslim is going to fucking pull you back from the bus and save your life. And that was the day. That was the day that I
took
up ballet classes, darling. And here I am today in front of you with a nip in the tuck.
Oh, man.
In my cashmere toga. Ipso facto.
Ta-da.
Ta-da. Who needed the penis anyway? I wasn't using it.
That's, having actual conversations with people outside of
I think there's a point, we were talking about this earlier on, and there's a point that I think, and it's something that I've been thinking long and hard about, is that the problem with men is that when we get to a certain age, we make a decision, and it tends to be as we head over 40.
Yeah.
We decide we stop receiving information.
Yeah, what you said earlier was brilliant.
We start transmitting.
Yeah.
We stop receiving and we start transmitting. It's time for you now to hear my wisdom.
Yeah.
And I'm not willing to listen to anything you've got to say. Yeah. So we stop becoming teachable.
Yeah.
And what happens then is slowly but surely over a period of time, you become an old fucking curmudgeon. Things aren't good enough.
Yes.
Things are too small or too big or too young or too stupid or not standing in the right place.
Yeah.
And then me.
And then you're getting smaller and smaller.
And then you wonder why you have a heart attack or die of arse cancer. You know what I mean? And it's because of all these things that you've created.
Yeah.
You're creating the bile that is then going to eat up the inside of you.
Because of your physically. Expectations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because of your resentments.
Yeah, right.
You become resentful. Now, you quietly become resentful because resentments only hurt the person who's got them. The host is only hurt by resentments.
Yeah.
Not the person you're resentful towards.
No.
They haven't a clue.
They have no idea.
Because you're smiling through gritted teeth at them. Meanwhile, your head's going to fucking hit you. Are you going, you're all right, Michael? Yeah, you're okay. But why are you grinding your teeth into talcum powder? I don't know. It's just this thing I'm going through.
No,
and it's that thing of what is resentments. Somebody said that resentments are like setting yourself on fire and hoping the other person dies of smoke inhalation. Right? But somewhere down the line, I have to fight against my inner curmudgeon.
Yeah.
And I'm in my 50s now, and I've spent 10 years, and I can feel it coming up in me.
Man.
I can feel it, and I go, oh, here it goes again. And sometimes I let the snake out of my mouth.
Yeah.
And then I've got to try and put it back in again. And I've got to then deal with the devastation and the collateral damage that it's done.
Do you worry that you'll get to a point where you go, fuck it, and don't feel that you have to put it back in?
Well, I have done that in the past, and I will probably do it in the future. But then there's a lot of cleaning up to be done afterwards.
Yeah.
And I know from evidence of the past that there's a lot of clearing up to be done.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's painful and it's embarrassing. And it's like falling into a big bucket of shite. It's really easy to fall into the bucket, and it's a fucking nightmare to get out of.
Yeah.
And it stinks, and everybody can see it and smell it.
Yeah.
And you gotta take it off, and you gotta wash it, and you gotta take it to the dry cleaners, and you gotta do all those things.
Yeah.
There's that thing, do you wanna be right or do you wanna be happy?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And as we get older as men, we wanna be right.
Yeah.
And that's why we're not happy.
Yeah.
Because we wanna be right. And the thing about being right is you get to the point where you're so full of righteous indignation that you ostracize yourself from every environment that you're in.
Yeah.
Because you're taking everybody's inventory. You're looking at everybody. He's doing that wrong. Was he dressed like a fool? What do you call them socks?
Oh,
for the sake of my day. Well, look, well, we lad, put that, eat with the fork properly.
Before you know it, you're in your 60s and
you're on your own.
Yeah.
You're on your own. And you can, and the thing about living on a mountain of your own making, of your own righteousness, there's only room for one person up there, right?
Yeah.
But you get a great view of everybody down in the Happy Valley, sitting around singing Kumbaya by the fire, toasting their fucking Marl marshmallows.
Yeah, but at least you're right, aren't you? Hey?
You're cold, because you're taking all your clothes off and told them to go fuck themselves, right? And then, but after a while, you get so cold and so lonely, you got to come down the mountain, and you've got to use humility to go over and say to them, can you move up? And you know something to do? Because they're not a fucking dickhead like you are. Now, men have a lot to answer for.
Yeah.
And I completely agree that everything that's wrong, most 100%, 99.999% of this world that's wrong with this world is because of the institutional patriarchy.
Yeah,
I completely agree with that.
Yeah.
Right? Part of the reason I don't get involved in that Facebook backwards and forwards or the Twitter backwards and forwards stuff. I have my belief system. Of course I have. You know, you can't be from Northern Ireland and not be political.
No.
we can be a bit too political.
It's in your blood,
man. So it's whether you keep your mouth shut or not. But, you know, I believe in a personal revolution is what I believe in.
Mm.
I believe in that you are in control of how you go about your world.
Mm.
So, you know, I think, you know, having a background as a stand-up comedian, and you being one, you know this, that our job is to make people happy. We go on stage for 20 minutes or a half an hour or 2 hours or whatever length of time we're allotted for that that job. And our job is to change people from being, you know, ambivalent to being ecstatic. And we come off feeling brilliant about it, and we've got a talent, and we've got a power that, you know, you do this, I know, I watch you do it, and you and I do it, and we do it together, is when we go into social situations, be it a cafe where we've just been, or into a shop, the person behind the jump, we try and make them laugh and try and bring a bit of joy to their day, because somewhere in the back of my head, I know that there's other people who have been ignored them or been ignorant to them or try to bully them into getting them to do what they want them to do, whatever, treating them like a servant as opposed to just a person.
A
person who's serving them, right? And, you know, to have that level of empathy means that you're engaged in your own personal revolution.
Yeah, well, it speaks volumes when watching you go through where we were in the market in Brixton there, and you were just the way you entered the room, and everyone was like, "How you doing? Good to see you." On the way back out, "How you doing?" And there were people coming out of shops like cuckoo clocks, like, "How you doing? How you doing?" And that speaks volumes about the kind of person you are.
But I think it also speaks volumes for Brixton.
Yeah,
you know, and there's a part of the worry of. Obviously is, but this is all projection, is that, you know, the white middle classes are moving in, the white millennials are moving in, and they don't want to talk to each other, and they're sitting inside in their white goods, in their £500,000 bed sits, really pissed off, and, you know, and they're complaining about, you know, the streets not being clean enough or whatever. And Brixton has a special relationship with the people who live here, is there's a collective thought, which is everybody looks out for each other.
Yeah.
Now, I think that's just part of the personal revolution now. So my job isn't to walk around and go, "God, it's all going to rack and ruin around here since Whitey moved back in." You know, it's not that. It's about, what can you do today?
Yeah.
You know, how can you, you know, if you meet somebody, say, "All right, how you doing?"
Yeah.
Now, if I make eye contact and say hello to somebody over here, if they're English and from the south of England, they'll go, "Oh, they won't make keep your eye contact," and they look thinking you're wanting something off them.
Yeah,
so they don't want to engage with you. Now, where I come from, if I make eye contact with you and you put your head away and don't make eye contact with me, in Northern Ireland, I think, "What's up with him?
Right.
Why not send hello?" So if I engage with you and you're in Northern Ireland, you say hello back.
Yeah.
That's you saying, "You've got nothing to fear from me."
Yeah, right. Yeah, right? Interesting.
So when I came over to London, I'd say to people, "All right, what about you?" People go, "Oh, God,
oh yeah.
What's he doing? What's he doing?" And I go, "Fucking pig ignorant bastards." Yeah. Like, all I'm doing is saying hello to them.
And they're just terrified of...
They're terrified. And of course, then I don't realise that the natural racism towards this accent is already saying to them, "Get on the floor, don't be a fucking hero." They're already hearing that. You know?
Because that's all we were told. That's all we knew. Yeah.
But now there's a whole generation that don't.
They
don't recognise that. You know, there's a whole generation that don't have any historical knowledge because the war in Northern Ireland is part of it, has been consigned to history so far. You know what I mean?
How did you did when you came over, or when you were living through that, did it affect you directly, the troubles?
Yes and no. I don't think there's anybody in Northern Ireland who's over a certain age who weren't affected in some way. And I don't mean that we got our house blown up and we had to live in a bomb crater. You know, it didn't have to. You know, I didn't have to camouflage my face with a knife between my teeth to go and get a loaf. It wasn't, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But the way it's portrayed, the way we hear about it, it's like everybody was...
But, you know, I think that the six counties of the north part of Ireland, or Northern Ireland, or Ulster, whatever the fuck you want to call it, right?
Yeah.
Collectively, it's under some form of post-traumatic stress disorder.
Right.
So there's a lot of families who've been affected just in... how you go about it, how you speak to each other.
Right.
There's no such thing as a simple question. There's no such thing as a simple answer.
Right.
Everything has some subtext to it. Everything has some information.
Yeah.
You know, there's information, you know, we're very friendly. Flip side of that is, we're fucking nosy. Yeah. The Irish are so friendly. Yeah. They're fucking nosy.
Yeah, so when I ask you a question, I actually want to know.
Well, we're going to ask you a question. Yeah, we'll ask questions that seem really innocent, but actually they're just full of information.
Right, yeah.
And you don't know it because you don't talk like that.
No.
But we have had to talk like that. Even to the expression of spell Harry has... where I come from has so many like a connotation. If somebody stopped you in the street and said spell Harry, right? If you went, will you spell Harry?
H-A.
Oh, sorry? Go again.
H-A double R-Y.
Yeah. So you said H-A double R-Y, didn't you? Yeah. Right. Well, that would mark you out as a Protestant in the old days.
Right.
If you said H-A-R-R-Y, it marked you out as a Catholic in those days.
Yeah, right.
I don't know what it's like now.
No.
But that would be... Fuck. Somebody say, "All right, mate, spell Harry." And you go, your arse will start playing the clarinet because you know no matter...
Yeah.
You no matter what way this is going to go, The bottom line is that guy wants to lump you anyway. Oh,
fuck, man.
You know?
Yeah. I remember talking to you years ago. You were telling me about... I mean, that was it. We were in a bar and then you had to sit in a certain place to see the door.
Yeah, I never sit with back to your door.
Yeah.
Never sit back to your door.
It was right today when you came in, I was like, I'm going to sit this way.
Yeah.
Because it just stuck with me that I never had to live that life.
I was talking to a mate yesterday who's a Londoner, and she was saying, we went into for something to eat, and she laughingly offered me the seat that was facing out into the room. And I went, fuck, is it that obvious? And she went, yeah, but also, she's all the geezers I've been out with, they all sit
all
like
the
that.
Same. Yeah,
so it doesn't mean it's not just a Northern Irish thing.
No, you're right.
It's the sign of somebody who's been in trouble, going to be in trouble, worried there's going to be trouble.
Yeah.
That's the environment that you're
from. Yeah, you're right, man.
So that doesn't make the fact that I'm from Northern Ireland any different, but it just means that there was the propensity for violence and the opportunity for violence was around, you know? And also, if you took the violence out of Northern Ireland, it was a pretty boring place as well. We were funny, but we're funny and violent, And we're,
but sociable.
Yeah, it's sociable.
That's the thing, because punching shit out of each other in a garden.
While laughing,
Oh, you.
During happy hour. 2 pints of Guinness. Actually, both of them are for me. And an ambulance for this guy. An ambulance for Harry.
The Irish families that I knew, and there was only a couple of them, but they were it was always come round and but would treat you like one of the family. It was like, yeah, come round, have what you want, basically open house. So I imagine that was like what it was like when you were growing up.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But there was that demarcation between the sexes was a lot more obvious when I was a kid growing up, you know, that the women sort of huddled together with the women and the kids and the men went and did what they wanted, be it, you know, fucking build bonfires or barricades or fucking lying ditches with a fucking semi-automatic rifle waiting for the helicopters to go away or whatever men got up to, like fishing, you know.
But it was just accepted.
It was accepted that men went to the bar just like everywhere else. But it was also, there was a thing that, you know, there was a sexual, the sexual apartheid was very strong, but it was also, you know, the reality was it's a very matriarchal society.
Right.
You know, the women were in charge.
Yeah, absolutely.
The women
were
completely in charge. And the men were just sort of, you know.
They quite enjoyed you fucking off out of the way.
Oh, but also, getting right from under the feet. But my dad was a submariner. My dad was in submarines before he got married. In that space between the end of the war and the early 50s. And he said in the Navy, the expression was something along the lines of, if you can't fuck it, you fight it, and you can't fuck it or fight it, you paint it. You know what I mean? And that was really, made me laugh, because inherently men are that simple.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And in a lot of ways, if you feed us and fuck us, we're happy.
Yeah.
And women, especially working class environments, women know that.
Yeah.
You know? Like, my ma ran the house.
Yeah.
But my dad knew that.
Yeah.
You know, my dad knew that and was quite happy with that, you know?
Yeah. It was always, ask your mother. Ask your mother.
And also, you know, my ma could make a tanner look like a tenner.
An
expression where I came from, you know? And she was great. She came from the markets in Belfast. So it's that sort of big family, you know, big working class Catholic family.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then my dad came from a fatherless environment. His dad died when he was young.
Right.
So, and he had quite an overbearing mother. So that was, I got to see both sides of it.
Yeah.
But it was in the world that I grew up in, the women were always very strong. I think one of the things that I struggled with was that, closing a deal sexually with a woman, trying to, you know, pull in girls. I know I was never good at pulling girls.
No.
Because I knew it was bullshit. And I came from a world where they knew it was bullshit, you know? And I was the wee fucking big-nosed, big-eared, squeaky-voiced, cheeky-wee fucker who wasn't the captain of the football team.
Yeah, yeah.
So when looks mattered, I was down the pecking order.
Yeah.
So I was the funny wee lad.
Right. You know? So
that paid dividends later on. You know what I mean? But to be funny got you out of a lot of trouble and helped you stay up late.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Because you're entertaining. you would be dragged out of bed to entertain, or you'd be allowed to stay up a wee bit longer.
Because, as long as you
didn't, and what I learnt was, and I hope I learnt it, was not to be a pain in the arse for too long.
Right. You know, right. Because you'd be funny. You're welcome.
Yeah, you could be funny and be a pain in the arse, and then you were sent to bed.
Yeah.
But, you know, as far as, like, my dad's environment, you know, wee lads, Jesus, I fucking remember one. You know? And that funny thing of, you know, your children should be seen and not heard.
Yeah.
Or men don't really want a wee lad who's cleverer or quicker than them, because it shows how...
Right, of course, yeah.
You know, how sort of stolid their lives have been, you know?
Yeah.
So you get a lot of that. You have to deal with that sort of slow-moving man who's really trying to fucking on. And all he really wants to do is talk about the 2:30 at Kempton and fucking all that there, you know what I mean? Shut up, you lad, will you? Who's asked your fucking opinion? Who's your man in the corner type thing, you know what I mean? So you were damped down the whole lot.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know,
that being brought up with that kind of, don't stick your head above the... Yeah, parapet sort of thing.
Well, it was enjoyed, you know, for the entertainment of the women, but for the men, you know,
you were just showing off.
Showing off, we lads, so you get a clip. But that thing of what I find interesting about that, again, we're talking about the patriarchy and stuff, is the that sense of, you know, if you're having children, it's evolution. Your child should be better looking, should be taller, should be fitter, should be clever. Otherwise, you're not doing your job as a parent.
No.
So really, you should be celebrating that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? Yeah.
And I've always had a thing with my kids, which is that trying to teach them when enough's enough.
Mm.
To be able to say, look, this is what that's good is really funny. But if it goes on too long, it becomes tedious and boring, and then you'll be told to shut the fuck up. Yeah. So the shorthand was first time great, second time all right, third time enough, third time no.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
So is that the sort of the law of three, even the law of three within comedy?
Of course, yes. You know?
But it's that way of sort of passing on what you've learnt, not because if you have wisdom, it's because I've been down that road.
Yeah.
And I know what that road is. Where that road leads to.
That road
leads to you being told to go to bed early because you're becoming a pain in the arse.
Yeah.
So that's why you can't have that extra glass of Coca-Cola at 7 o'clock. You know what I mean? That's why that's not happening.
Because you're going to be pirouetting around
And I'm going to sit and talk to you about it and explain it to you. So then the next time I tell you, that's the second time I've told you, and the third time. And I've said to my kids, you don't want to see this face.
Yeah.
So why don't we do it?
Do it
this way. You know, one of the things that I've been consistently most of my life is a dad.
Yeah.
You know, I've been a dad since I was a wee lad.
Yeah.
You know, similar to yourself.
Same, you absolutely, yeah.
Young fathers.
Yeah, man.
And, you know, I was a dad from when I was 20.
Same, yeah.
And, you know, so that's weird because, like, me and you're born the same day. You know, that thing of your life being measured by, you know, I was a dad when I was... before I was a man.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I've grew up with my kids, but also that thing of that you didn't have, you tried to have carefree days, but you couldn't.
Yeah.
You know? You no matter what I did that was a wee bit spicy, in the back of my head, there was that thing of, but you've got a kid.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Everybody else is flying their kite and they're doing that in their 20s.
I always had one hand on the ground.
Yeah.
And just,
you've got a kid. Yeah. Whether you like it or not, you can. Not see them, you can have a bad relationship with the wife, she can be your ex, you maybe never had a relationship with her, but you've still got a kid.
Yeah,
you can't have an ex kid.
No,
right? Like my dad, the day that my eldest was born, my dad, I was just in that sort of washing machine head. I didn't know what really was going on. Everything just had happened. It's happened. It's, you know, and saying to my dad, holding this wee beautiful wee baby boy in my arms, and my dad, I said, New Year's Day, send him, what do you think? And my dad looked at me and went, toothpaste out of the tube now, son. don't be pushing that back in again. Had to get on with it.
Yeah, that's it.
And that was the whole, like, I can pontificate to you, I can transmit to you, I can browbeat you as much as I want, and you're not friggin' listening, or you can choose not to listen.
Yeah.
But then life happens.
Yeah, man.
Now, if you don't listen and then life slaps you upside of the head, what do you want me to do about it now?
Yeah.
I'm not Doctor Who. I'm not a fucking time traveller.
It's done.
We can't go back.
No, that's it.
It is what it is. Welcome to the club.
Yeah.
Welcome to the mundane men's club.
Yeah.
Where you're now doing this.
Yeah.
Now, if you were clever, you could be doing this in 10 years' time and you'd be really looking forward to doing this and it would be a great life and you've set out your stall and you get yourself ready for this.
But
now, this has happened to you 10, 15, 20 years too early. You've got to get on with it, man.
That's it, yeah.
And I'm sorry.
That's exactly what it was as well. It was just, you're doing this now. Yeah, and you just did it.
And it was fear, you know. So, you know, we talk about love and fear. You know, that, you know, fear has been around in my life a lot. Yeah. You know, growing up in a housing estate has its own fears.
Of course,
growing up within the troubles in Northern Ireland brings its own fears. You know, growing up, you know, and then, you know, not getting the education that you should have got.
Yeah.
Brings its own fears. You know, not being a fucking, I haven't got anything.
No.
I haven't got no qualifications. Fuck, I'm getting into, you know, getting into a gunfight with a butter knife, you know, type thing.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
You know,
I think that's where I got in the last couple of years. Kind of, I was never very academic, and it's only been the last couple of years where I've started being a bit more open to learning.
Yeah,
kind of going, well, I instead of going, oh, I don't know anything about that, going, well, we'll go and fucking look it up.
But also, you know, men don't say I don't know anything about that unless they're given evidence to the police.
Yeah,
you know, men tend not to say I don't know, and one of the biggest. The biggest bits of fucking freedom you can get is actually saying, I don't know.
Yeah.
And stopping the car and going, excuse me, mate, I'm lost.
Yeah.
Can you help
me? But that voice inside your head going,
don't do it.
Yeah. It's feminine to do that.
It's a sign that you're a loser. It's a sign that you're a mark. You're not a leader of the pack.
Yeah.
You're going to be cast out. You're a wounded gazelle type thing.
Yeah, you know exactly
I mean?
That.
So, all of those things that men have been, you know, the patriarchy has taught the men within this situation, you know, you need to step up.
Yes.
Or you're just going to be a grunt. You're going to be a soldier. You're not officer material. You're not going to be in the front of the queue. We need to get up early and get our towels on the fucking
the
deck chairs first in the great fucking summer holiday of life.
Yeah.
You know, you need to get to the front. You know, you were born into the lucky world. You know, and we're the lucky ones.
Yeah.
We really are. Now, what do you do with that? Do you hold it and in an avaricious way and keep it, nobody's touching my, look at my beauty, it's mine, like that wee scrumpled up man and fucking,
oh, yeah.
whatever, Gollum, whatever, you know.
That's
it can be like that, or you can have a humility towards it and go, how blessed am I?
Yeah.
So on a daily basis, when you go out, the private revolution, the personal revolution, when you see somebody, you say hello. If you can help somebody, you help people.
Yeah, man.
You know, and if you can do a good deed, then do it.
Yeah.
But don't do it as a way of being able to boast about it later.
No.
Do it for what it is.
Do it for doing it. Yeah.
You can do it without boasting about it or even telling anybody about it. That's even better.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And those are great things, because there's something about that that goes, I feel when I do something nice for other people, like before I met you today, before I left the house, my wife's upstairs writing up in the attic.
Yeah. Right?
I made her a wee sandwich and a cup of tea and brought it up to her and surprised her with it. And, you know, that made her happy. And she didn't have to come all the way downstairs to get herself a cup of coffee and a sandwich. I brought it up to her and said, I'm away. I got to kiss and went out the door. There's a part of me going, that was good. It's like, get up in the morning, make your bed.
Yes. You know,
just get up and do something that's positive.
Yeah.
Right from the very start.
Yeah, man.
Wow. And just do a little bit of that and just a little bit of kindness. And you've got an opportunity to be kind. Take it.
Yeah.
Because you don't know what that's happened to, that's going to do for the other person.
Yeah, you're right,
man. Actually, what it does is for you.
Yeah.
It does it for you too. So there's a beautiful selfishness to it. That if I'm, if I can make you smile, that's making me smile.
Yes.
That's feeding my ego in the right way.
Yeah, yeah. That's so important, the right way.
Yeah.
Like you say, because as soon as you, a lot of time when you hear the word ego, you feel it's like a negative thing, whereas it's not always, is it? It's just,
no,
you know, we all need that kind of energy. That,
and also that thing of, you know, there's an addictive quality to power, you know, and we've all got a level of power in our life that we can, you know, and, you know, if I get off on screwing you down, you know, it's that thing where the bully becomes the bully.
Yes.
And the worry of where life is going now is, you know, what are we going to do with this new power? What are the people who this power should be turned over to?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the disenfranchised, the sisters, the everybody concerned who haven't had power in the past.
Yeah.
If we're going to evenly give out the power, what are we going to do with it?
Yeah, of course.
You know?
Yeah.
When you've got, if you're going to be, if all of that thing is done from a period, from a perspective of love, what are we going to do with that love?
Yeah.
How are we going to give it out? You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And there's, you know, for the state that the world's in at the moment, you know, you know, I look at like Calais and, you know, what's going on in Syria and what's going on in Africa and what's going on in sweatshops around the world, and, you know, the way that we're being ostracized from each other emotionally, you know, history repeats itself. It does feel like, you know, it does feel like Europe in the 1930s.
Oh, man.
It does have a feeling of that repeating itself. But it's all fear-based. I can't make that stop.
No.
But I can, certainly in my everyday environment.
Yeah, the tiny revolutions. Your personal revolutions. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, you know, see somebody and just be kind. Make an eye contact and say hello. How are you?
Yeah.
You know. And if you can give somebody a quid, give somebody a frigging quid. And in return, go, I don't want to give him because he's a junkie. Give him a fucking quid, man.
Yeah.
Honest to God, he's not lying around going, another clever junkie wins. By the sweat on my shoes. I got one over on you, Mr. First Worlder. Unbelievable. Give him a fucking quid. Dry your eyes and give him a fucking quid, man. Honest to God. It'll make you feel a lot better.
Absolutely, man. You know? Yeah. Oh, God. It's nice to hear someone else say it, because that all the time going, oh, no. Like Steve Hughes had that great bit about, oh, no. Give the money to us and we'll make sure they get it. And it's not going to get to them, is it? It's too busy going into their pockets. But just give the fucking dude
there's administration.
A quid, man.
Even if every charity has administration costs, but, you know, so that's, and my job is not to hear is the poo-poo one over the other, you know, and we can very easily say, you know, that charity shit because these guys are doing that and those guys are doing that, so therefore I'm not giving to them. And ultimately, you know, it's like saying that religion shit because they do this and because they do that. Ultimately, you're looking for a reason to hate, and it's because you're frightened.
Yeah.
Because you're frightened that there's some part of your status deep down inside you don't like you.
Of course, yeah.
And the reason you don't like you is because you haven't went into yourself enough to care about yourself enough.
Yeah.
If you care about yourself enough on a daily basis, you're going to have that level of empathy for your fellow man.
Yeah, man.
Now, if you don't have that, everybody else is taking something from you.
Yeah.
And why is that? Because you're reading the newspapers, you're watching the TV programs, you're going to the Facebook and the Twitter feeds, you're retweeting stuff, or you're hitting like or fast forward or forwarding all this stuff that says, yes, it's all shit. Look, and it's not me, it's them. It's not me, it's them, it's them, right? Pressing the button and thinking you're being political, you know, all of that is just getting us away from the main fucking, the main problems.
Yeah.
The main problem is if we cared about each other a bit more, we would fucking, we would back up the NHS all the way.
Of course, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
If we cared about each other, we would be demanding more social fucking, social housing.
Yeah.
If we cared more, we would be giving a fuck about the immigration.
Yeah, in instead of some online petition.
Yeah, just, and also that giving a damn about other human beings. We're all God's children.
Yeah.
You're nobody, nobody's above me and nobody's below me.
No.
And that's, you know, I was brought up with that working class socialist values that were put into me by my dad.
Yeah, right.
And my mother. And they weren't beating it into me. We weren't having our chips on Socialist Worker newspaper. It wasn't that. It wasn't that.
Yeah.
It was just, you know what's right and you know what's wrong.
Yeah, right, absolutely. Thing. Yeah, you're right.
Honest to God, you don't need a fucking manifesto to tell you what's right and wrong.
No.
So you deep down inside, stop this. And but if you start looking at the system, you can see the system's flawed. The system's flawed is because men, inherently it's men, are frightened that they're going to lose their power.
Yes. Yeah.
You know? And do you know something? We all lose our power.
Yeah.
The hose doesn't fucking shoot the water across the fucking across the garden as far as it used to.
No.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It does. That's what life's all about. Otherwise, we'd all live. We'd all live forever. So there is the cycle of life. There is that, you know, there was that thing that Billy Connolly said the other night. I don't know if you've seen that documentary.
No, I didn't see it, no.
A two-part documentary on Billy Connolly, and it was beautiful. And it really got to me because I grew up with Billy Connolly. You know, he was the first, he was the first original. He was sort of like my punk.
Yeah.
I grew up, he's my comedian.
Yeah.
Not Frank Carson, not... You know,
but it was in amongst all that. Yeah, it was the storytelling. Real.
It was storytelling. He was like the funny guy from the housing estate, as far as I was concerned. You know, your aspirations to be like that, you know. But he said this thing about, it's Parkinson's he's got, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the irony of him being discovered on Parkinson's and end up with Parkinson's. that how he deals with having it is he realises that for him, it's like he's gone over a hill to another place and he needs to get rid of all these things to make his journey lighter.
Yeah, right.
So when he can't play the guitar properly, it's something he may have to lay down. So he's laying down all these things to make ready for the new journey because the new journey is not going to need those things.
Right, yeah.
These are worldly things.
Wow.
And he's gone somewhere else.
Yeah.
And to put an adventurous, a spiritually adventurous slant on what his disease is, I thought was such a beautiful way of going.
Yeah.
And if and when these things happen to me, I hope to have that level of acceptance around it. You know?
Yeah, that kind of that spirituality, sort of that. Yeah, that.
I think
that oneness with like acceptance and.
Yeah, acceptance is a big thing. I think acceptance in this world is a big thing. You know, to accept what your lot is and to accept that you have a part to play, instead of having expectations over it.
Yeah.
You know, if we have expectations, it's based on your ego. It's you going, well, I should be, you should be thinking this way. You should be doing this for me. I did that for you, so therefore you should be doing that for me.
Yeah.
I have expectations within this relationship, you know, within our loving relationship. I've done that for you, so you should be doing that for me.
And which is where I've got problems with, because I'm to that point, I'm like, well, I've been to counselling and I've had therapy and I've dealt with my demons, and so now my relationship should be this sort of way. So I have these expectations.
Of the other people?
Yeah.
But also that's like you saying that this therapy was so good that it completely cured me of life. That I don't have to have, my life is just going to, that's medication.
Yeah.
You're saying that I've been given loads of nice drugs and I don't have to think anymore.
That's it, yeah.
You know, I don't have to engage in life anymore, you know.
No.
And we're all work in progress, and if we... And we're all human, so we're always going to fuck it up, and we're always going to open our mouths. We're always going to be standing up. We should be sitting down. We're always going to be talking. We should be listening.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't do it all the time because we're not that stupid or we're not that medicated. But
But you know, like it's understanding that we're, like you say, human beings, yeah, and we fuck up.
And have some acceptance.
Yeah.
Just have some acceptance of stuff. And I think that's the struggle. That's the struggle. You know, the way that the state of our lives, that what we're aiming for is a childlike acceptance.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
So I see it with my children as they're getting older, their acceptance goes away and expectations take over, because there's a tipping point. But there's a bit when, like, my daughter's still in that world now where, yeah, things are not right.
Yeah.
And she wants them to be a certain way, but she also has a bigger acceptance level. And my son, who's now a teenager, he's now trying to balance his acceptance over his expectations.
Right, you know?
And he'll go through the next sort of 10 years really trying to engineer those into his way of thinking, which would be his path, you know?
Got you.
And it'll be his trajectory. And it's really interesting watching that. And as my body, you know, lets me down and my brain hopefully frees me up, because I'm willing to be teachable, remain teachable.
Yeah.
Instead of being that curmudgeon.
Yeah, which is so important. Yeah. Like I say, being open.
Just listening to people, you know, listening to people, you know, and just being willing to engage. So if you're saying hello to somebody in the street, what you're getting back is a lovely bit of wisdom or is a lovely bit of humanity back.
Yeah.
I was walking along the street here the other day and I'd been over to chemist and I came walking back. As I'm walking along the street, I've got these tablets I've got to take and I'm like, fuck, an old man tablets.
When you start getting into tablets,
just fucking all of a sudden I'm going along down the wormhole of it's all the decay and the death and it's all coming, it's going to be arse cancer and death and this Rasta came walking along the street towards me and he looked like Gregory Isaacs. He looked amazing. He had a long black leather coat.
Wow.
And he had a black shirt and he had a black bootlace type tie and he did dreads and he was wearing like a big bowler hat, but it was a fur bowler hat.
Wow.
He looked amazing.
It was spectacular.
Really spectacular, really beautifully, and he's wearing this long black coat that had a little bit of silver around it and he looked amazing. And I went, as we approached each other, I just started smiling and he looked at me and I went, Rasta man, you look beautiful. Can I just say you look really amazing? And he says thank you, and he put his fist up and we touched fists. And I thought, you look brilliant, mate. Just
wanted
to say, you look brilliant. And he said, thank you. I mean, no, seriously.
And you felt energised.
Yeah, and he went, he said to me, I'm going to say goodbye to my brother. I'm burying a brother. I don't know if he meant his brother or a brother.
A
brother or whatever the relationship was, whether it's blood or not. And he said, well, you're representing beautifully. I'll say a prayer for him and help him with his journey. And he says, yeah, thank you. Thank you, brother.
Wow,
and then
man.
Gave me a fist and went off. I went into my house and he went off to the funeral. And that was a bit of interaction that wouldn't have happened if I had put my head down and not made eye contact. And that was a beautiful bit of life, you know. And I could sit here and tell you more and more and more. Not because I'm such an amazing person.
No.
It's about the...
But this little moment of...
Little moments.
Just sometimes look up.
And also the joy of doing what we do for a living. You know, I'm an actor now more than I'm a stand-up. I haven't done stand-up in a long time. But, you know, that engaging with other people as part of your job.
It fires me up.
And that's, you know, we'll go back to talking about you as a comper and you as an act, and even knowing you before you're an act, you're really personable. You give a damn about other people. I can tell it about you.
Yeah.
That's one of your main qualities. And when you're on stage, you give over that, we're all having a laugh, let's all have a laugh together, chill out mate, it's all cool, and everybody goes, dude, the big hairy bear's going to take us on a journey, we're going to be all right. And if it all goes to shit, we get a cuddle later on.
Oh man, did you feel like growing up, like you've talked about when you were a kid, but was there pressure to be like a man, like a real man, you know, like
No. Not from my dad.
No.
My dad was a man in the... My dad called himself a gregarious loner, which was a lovely way to describe it. My dad was a Wichita lineman. He climbed, he went up your telegraph poles and put your line in for you.
Yeah, of course, man.
He was a county down lineman.
Wow. Know?
And he worked for the post office. And so he was on his own a lot, or his partner who died, Geordie Barrett. They used to go out in vans together.
Right? Yeah.
And so they would go out and he would go to farms and put their lines in for him or houses out in the countryside. But my dad would was never interested in going to the pub.
No.
He was never interested in that side of the masculine or the geezers. He wasn't a geezer man. We never had mates coming around the house. He never had mates coming around the house, rather. No. He sat in the house. He read his books. All the things that he was interested in were all non-competitive.
Right.
So he was into fishing. He was into shooting.
Yeah.
He was into photography. He was into the gardening. All those things that my dad... And they took up a lot. And he wrote. He wrote a lot.
Yeah, right.
He was always writing his book. I called it The Child That Never Leaves Home. Because he was never going to publish it. He was always writing it.
Yeah.
And he got a lot of joy out of it. And it was his own philosophy. And so my dad would say things like, I don't give a shite who won the 230 from Kempton.
Yeah.
I'm not standing in a bar talking car parts with another bloke, you know. And, yeah. You know, and talking about, talking about women as inanimate objects and talking about inanimate objects that you love as if they're women.
Yeah, of course.
Like she's a bit of a beast on the corners, but she gives a great torque and love, great handling she has. Oh, only come out of the house and give me dogs abuse type thing. And he always drew attention to that. So my dad was always quite critical of a certain type of man that run with the pack that were, in his eyes, were dangerous.
My dad was very much like that. Women had their place in the home and they did, for want of a better word, chauvinist. He was still a caring man, but there was still that, you know, women were there indoors and they did the cleaning and they did this, and then the man went out to work. Even though my mum had a job, work nights, there was still that. But I never had that. I was never, it wasn't into sport. It was music was always around. So I had that more, it was a bit more chilled out. But the masculine elements were more from outside.
Yeah, definitely. Same as us as well. Same as us too. My dad was, my dad wouldn't say was a misogynist in any way. But he would never make himself a cup of tea.
No.
My mum made him a cup of tea. And it was, what was celebrated was my dad's Christmas stuffing for the turkey.
Yeah, right. Yeah, there's always dad's making a curry on Friday.
That's Christmas, my dad's going to do the stuffing.
Yeah.
Like once a year.
Yeah, that was it.
But that's not to say he was always curious, and I think I got that from him. My dad was always curious about the difference between men and women, how men view things, how women view things. So that was always up for debate.
Yeah.
And also, he was married to my mother, and my mother was a lioness.
Right.
She was fierce.
Yeah.
And very loving and very fierce. You wouldn't want to get on the wrong side of Alice.
No.
But, and she was quick. She was inner city. Her sense of humour was very inner city.
Right.
I was from inner city Belfast. And one of the most beautiful things, I remember I was over doing a thing. Both my parents have passed on now. And I was staying in this hotel, or this B&B called the Rayanne House. If you're ever in Northern Ireland near Hollywood, go and stay in the Rayanne House.
Right.
It's the only 5-star B&B in the whole of Ireland. they do the Titanic menu.
Okay.
Once a month they do the menu from the Titanic.
Wow.
But also the husband and wife team that run it, impeccable food.
Yeah.
The award-winning, the breakfasts are just unbelievable. I've never seen a breakfast like it. You know, say 3-4 pages long, you can choose from your breakfasts. So I stayed there and I'm walking along, and it's on the main road, which is along the back road near a Hollywood Golf Club or Rory McIlroy country, right? So it's quite detached house, posh houses, right? And I used to do my paper round along there when I was a kid. So I'm walking into Hollywood one morning and to have a coffee and reminiscing, both my parents are dead. I'm walking along that street, this road, the main road, and I'm remembering all the little things that I have, you know, going back, haven't been home in 35 years. So everything's like a little memory.
Yeah.
I'll get a smell and I'll be a certain place. And I passed this house that my mother used to clean in. She was a cleaner and I was a wee kid. And I remember...
And did you go with her a lot of the time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this house had an orchard in the front garden. And I climbed one of the trees and took one of the apples. And the woman came out and she ripped me a new one.
Right.
And I remember every time I've walked past that house, I always have that memory. And I would have been about 6 or 7. And I remember my ma being mortified. Not pretending to have a go at me and tell me off, but actually she was annoyed with this woman. But it was her job. She was the cleaner.
Yeah.
Da, da, da.
Yeah.
Anyway, fucking middle class. Anyway, I'm at that, here's the God's honest truth, I'm at that point looking at that house, having that memory, and I looked, and as I said, been away from home a long time, so you see faces of, I see old Hollywood faces,
right,
and I go, I know you, but I don't know your name or whatever, right? And this guy come walking towards me, he's, oh, Michael, how you doing? You over for a wee while? And he's me, I'm over, I'm doing a TV show. He says, oh, good to see you. It's good, always good to see you on the TV. He says, I work with your mother down in the ordnance. My mum was a stitcher in the ordnance depot.
Right, right, right.
And he said, I work with Alice down the Remy there in the ordnance depot. He's me, all right. And he says, aye, your mother, great woman, great woman. I said, oh, thanks very much. He says, aye. He says, aye, Alice, word mechanic. She was a word mechanic. And he walked off. And I just heard word mechanic.
Yeah.
And I just thought, what a beautiful, that sums up Northern Ireland to me. It sums up that, you know, that you're not having a massive vocabulary, but using the least amount of words to get across, to paint the biggest picture.
Yeah.
To call my mother a word mechanic.
Beautiful.
And a man of a certain age who would have, what he's basically saying was, you wouldn't get the better of her.
No.
And she was quick, and she was quicker than the man.
Yeah.
If I can say that to you now, you know what I mean? And there's me
amazing.
Thinking about my ma, and this guy comes round the corner and gives me the best homage to my mother and then walks on. And it really choked me, you know, because there was something... Oh, I'm getting upset now.
No, man.
There was something really quite spiritual about it. Because I'm thinking about them and as I'm thinking about her, I believe when people die or they pass on, if you talk about them, you call them back. And because I was thinking about her, and then he come around the corner and just walked in and told me something beautiful about my mother.
Yeah.
It was like, it was a God-given thing. It was a God-given thing.
Beautiful.
It was like, I was being blessed to have those thoughts.
Yeah.
At that moment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, it was a blessing.
You were open to it, yeah.
My God went to me, there you go.
There you go,
miss
mate.
Your man, Dad, and you love your man, Dad. Here's a lovely
little gift for you.
Here's a wee gift for you.
Beautiful.
And that's why I'm telling that story. And the whatever tears I have now are not of sadness. They're just because I'm a sentimental old fart.
Yeah.
But
that's beautiful.
And the more you're away from home, the more sentimental you become. And the older you get, the more sentimental you become. And all those things are lovely.
Yeah.
All those things are lovely. It's not a fear of death. It's not a fear of what you're losing out on. It's actually, I become less emotionally eloquent.
Yeah.
And I become more emotional.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, that, for that bloke who was from my part of Hollywood, he was from, the reason he was walking out the back road is because he was from one of the housing estates.
Yeah,
he
came
from White
City,
he was from Redburn or Knockinagony or whatever. But he knew my ma, so he was old Hollywood.
Yeah.
And for him to say that really told me of, that's what I love about. And you say, when you, what was it about home that you, you know, what it is that defines where you're from?
Is that? Yeah.
Your ma, word mechanic.
Oh, man.
Boom.
Yeah.
Bang, bang.
And off.
He just gave me a 1-2 and he walked.
And he didn't even know.
He didn't even know. Oh, and that's the beauty of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, that, the joy of communication. Again, he could have just nodded.
Yeah, man.
And then, you know, he didn't. He stopped and we communicated and I got that from that.
Yeah.
Just like the Rasta story, why we should constantly be talking to each other,
be
constantly
open.
And enjoying each other's company.
Yeah.
And the more we enjoy each other and the more humility we get, the more humility we get, the more understanding, the more love we have for each other,
man.
The less we're in fear, the less we're frightened, the more we're able to change, the more hopefully we'll be able to change what this world will become.
Yeah, man.
And that's...
Yeah. This is why I wanted to have these conversations, because of that. I believe everything you're saying, and I'm like, rather than, like you say, just shouting at each other, throwing stones at each other, let's huddle and let's have a chat.
It's fair, you know. Some people don't want to be touched. Some people don't want to be, you know, people don't want to change.
Some people just want to be angry.
Well, they don't want to change.
Yeah.
It's too much like hard work.
Yeah.
You know, man, I've got to change what, these clothes aren't my clothes. I've got to go and get some whole new wardrobe.
Yeah.
This is my house. I've got to change the whole thing. Oh, I don't want to go change the whole fucking thing.
Yeah.
You're telling me everything I... Or everything you tell me... So it's telling me that everything I've stood up for is a lie.
Yeah.
So I've got to change everything. Yeah, I'm sorry, but you have to. You know? Women aren't bitches. They're not hoes.
No.
You know? They're not fucking third world citizens. We're all God's children.
Yeah,
so we
man.
Should divvy it up the right way.
Yeah.
Oh, but it's going to take hundreds of years. I know. So let's start eating the fucking elephant.
That's it. Yeah, like you said before, you've got to eat it.
There's an elephant in the room. You've got to eat the elephant. Yeah. So just decide where how it's going to be. Tail, trunk, knuckles, go.
Yeah, but you've got to do it.
You've got to do it.
Yeah, man.
Dry your eyes and eat the elephant.
It's beautiful, man. Beautiful. Thanks, man. Let's have a look where we're at. Yeah, man. Amazing.
That done?
Yeah. Michael.
Love you, man.
Pleasure, man. Love you too, man. Oh, that was beautiful.
I'm forgetting a wee bit of emotion.
No, wonderful, man. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Insane in the membrane.
God bless you, Michael Smiley. My God, that was a good chat. I really enjoyed that one. The world is a better place knowing that he's in it, isn't it? Isn't it? Of course it is. If you want to check out Michael Smiley, you can find him on Twitter, at Michael Smiley. You can also have a look, Google him and find some of the amazing movies that he's been in and TV shows. He's absolutely brilliant in everything. I absolutely love him. A quick favour while I've got you, while you're listening here. Wherever you listen to your podcast, I don't know where that is, it could be anywhere. You know, but, you know, like iTunes and things like that. If you're doing it that way, if you could subscribe and leave us a comment or a rating, that would be fantastic because it pushes us up the charts and it gets us noticed, you know, and then it gets people listening and we get more followers and then, you know, it becomes a thing. So if you could do that, that'd be fantastic because every single bit of feedback helps. Tell your friends to check out this and other great episodes like my chat with Rob Beckett.
This is your first big TV job.
Also, I've never even done a school play. I did some open mic gigs, did Edinburgh Fringe, got on the telly, and now I'm just on the telly on my own. No idea what I'm doing.
And you're the other side of the world as well.
I didn't even have a laptop, I had to buy a laptop for it.
Yeah, can they lend you?
And I'm on the other side of the world in the jungle doing nights, following Ant and Beck.
Once again, a huge thank you to Zen on Gaku for the music, to Paul Daniels at Dark Horse Digital for all the gubbins that goes on behind the scenes, and to Jade Adams once again for the inspiration.
Yay, that's me!
Take care, guys. Keep listening. Look after each other. Peace out.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.